And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, relationships, and life itself. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg. I hope you had a lovely week. Thanks for your emails and comments that we received. Thetis from Santa Barbara says, great show, and thanks for the listing of the movies that you discussed with Dan during your news segment a couple of weeks ago. And she would like to point out that the movie Food Fight, Revolution Never Tasted So Good by Chris Taylor is airing here in the Bay Area at the Sausalito Film Festival this Sunday, tomorrow at 1 p.m. Thank you, Thetis. This is a perfect comment because actually I'm speaking there after the film as part of a panel with the filmmaker Chris Taylor. So Food Fight tomorrow, Sunday at 1 p.m. at the Sausalito Film Festival at Cavallo Point, the lodge at the Golden Gate. For more information, please visit sausalitofilmfestival.com. Thank you, Thetis. If you have a comment or question, please email us at share@anorganicconversation.com. I just got back from visiting my family in Germany, and I gained about 8 pounds in 1 week. We all know that it is impossible to argue with your mom about being full, as her love is expressed through food. It has always been expressed that way from the moment we were born, and actually even before. How wonderful. As I am working out hard to shed my new love handles, I'm doing so with a newfound appreciation and understanding of that side of my mother. Just like the great mother, mothers in all shapes and sizes, mothers of all kinds, really all mothers, provide and feed and nourish. That's what they do. That's the definition of a mother. So why would I love the way the earth nourishes me and not appreciate the way my mother does and keep serving me food? It seems that I have a choice to say no to the earth's mother, but not to my mom, who gets upset when I decline the fourth serving. But I wonder if that's really true. The earth gets just as upset when I say no to her, when I suppress her natural ability and desire to nourish, to give, when I put my rules on her, when I ignore her expression and don't appreciate the incredible gift of having a mother. So I will still need to find a way next time I go to Germany to not gain weight, but at the same time fully embrace her expression of her love to me. Or maybe I will just say next time after my trip that in 1 week in Germany, I gained 8 pounds. 8 pounds of love. You're listening to An Organic Conversation, and we'll be right back after the break.
Schätze jeden Glauben hoch, auch ich misstraue über Eifer, das sei am besten jeder froh, mit dem, was er glaubt, oder mit dem, was er weiß, doch der, an den ich glaube, ist auch der, den ich preis.
Vielleicht hören sie nicht viel, vielleicht sehen sie nicht gut.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm your host, Helga Hellberg. I'm excited about our guest today, a woman, a mother, a leader, a president, who truly embraces the idea of ecology and sustainability in everything she does and everything she is. But first, as always, here's Dan McGovern with the news.
Good morning. This is Sustainable Food News, your weekly news service on an organic conversation, and I'm Dan McGovern. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has declared today, August 22nd, as the first National Honeybee Day. The mysterious large-scale loss of honeybees, which started 3 years ago, has been dubbed colony collapse disorder. There's no known cause or cure. About one mouthful in three in the diet directly or indirectly benefits from honeybee pollination. To hear more about the plight of honeybees, check out the August 1st broadcast of An Organic Conversation. Typical spices such as rosemary, thyme, clove, and mint are now becoming organic agriculture's key weapons against insect pests, according to a new study presented this week at the American Chemical Society's annual meeting. Some spice-based commercial products now being used by farmers are showing success in protecting organic strawberry, spinach, and tomato crops against destructive aphids and mites. But since essential oils tend to degrade rapidly in sunlight, the new pesticides are generally less potent than conventional pesticides and have to be applied in higher concentrations to work effectively. Some last only a few hours compared to days or even months for conventional pesticides. Researchers are also exploring the use of other spice-based products for use on fruits and vegetables to destroy microbes such as E. coli and Salmonella, which cause food poisoning. Illinois Governor Pat Quinn on Tuesday signed into law legislation that orders state agencies to purchase 20% of their food locally by 2020. State-funded institutions such as schools would have a goal of 10% by 2020. The law also creates a local food purchase preference for state-owned food buyers that allows them to pay a premium of up to 10% above the lowest bid in order to purchase locally grown goods. The law's goal is to build an active local farm and food market within Illinois, where 96% of the fruits, vegetables, and meats that Illinoisans eat are produced in other states or countries. An editorial written by Whole Foods Market CEO John Mackey has sparked calls for a boycott against the world's largest retailer of organic and natural foods. In the editorial published by the Wall Street Journal on August 12th, Mackey offered 8 reforms for the healthcare system as an alternative to reforms espoused by the Obama administration. Mackey said Obama's ideas on healthcare reform would move us much closer to a government takeover of our healthcare system. An immediate angry reaction from shoppers inundated Whole Foods headquarters, which quickly emailed an apology to customers, saying Whole Foods has no formal position on the healthcare reform debate. But that might not be enough to cool off customers who are using social media and the national press to garner support for a boycott against the supermarket chain. A boycott Whole Foods page on Facebook currently lists more than 22,000 members. The story has been picked up by most mainstream media, including Time Magazine, The New York Times, and The Los Angeles Times, among others. Last weekend, stores in Austin, Texas, and in Berkeley, California were picketed. Yesterday, demonstrations were held at Whole Foods stores in the cities of Cambridge and Framingham, Massachusetts. This is Sustainable Food News, your weekly news service on An Organic Conversation. I'm Dan McGovern.
Thanks, Dan, for this wonderful weekly service. And today is Honeybee Day. Who knew?
Who did know? They just announced it Thursday, so unless you got the newsletter.
So today is the first Honeybee Day ever.
The first Honeybee Day ever.
Katrina, did you know about it?
I had no idea. And as soon as I get home, I'm going to tell my bees. But of course, being bees, they may already know. They're good communicators.
They know everything. So on Thursday it was announced. And when was it decided? On Wednesday?
I don't know when it was decided. It seems like maybe some sort of diversion from the whole healthcare reform debate. You know, let's do something for the honeybees.
Okay. Yay for honeybees today. I think every day is Honeybee Day, but today is the official one, USDA Honeybee Day. Wonderful. Yes, healthcare reform. Well, I read John Mackey's article, and I think he's raising some really, really good points. What's your take on that, Dan?
I think there's, he may be raising good points, whether I agree with him or not, but I think what the whole focus of this is whether a CEO of a major supermarket chain that deals with tens and hundreds of thousands of customers should go on and speak the way he did that may get a lot of his customers mad. I mean, the first rule of retail marketing is know your customers. You would think there'd be someone there in the higher management at Whole Foods that might say, "Hey, John, let me take a look at that editorial before you send it out to the Wall Street Journal."
Sure. But, you know, Whole Foods has a leadership position in this nation, and for him to speak his mind, I mean, he's not saying that we shouldn't have healthcare reform. He's actually explicitly saying we should. And he's just pointing out that, you know, it might need to be incorporated into the education system. He's not explicitly saying physical exercise, but as we all know, the whole area of preventative care, of taking care of your body, of eating as healthfully as you can, of exercising, of, you know, that whole area, I think must be part of the discussion.
No doubt. But you can, 2 weeks earlier, Mackey was quoted in The Independent in the United Kingdom saying that they sell a bunch of junk. So having him come out and saying they sell a bunch of junk and then to say people need to take care of themselves. But in saying that, he was trying to say that, you know, Whole Foods needs to take that leadership position,
yeah,
and having people eat healthier and educating them on doing that.
Yes, so. Great. Well, thanks, Dan McGovern of Sustainable Food News, for this weekly service. I'm sure we'll continue this conversation as the discussion goes on. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Helga.
My guest today is Katrina Frey, owner of Frey Vineyards and also the president of Demeter USA. Katrina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's very lovely to be here this morning, Helga.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to driving back up to Mendocino County and seeing my honeybees and telling them the big news.
So, yes, Mendocino County, I know you're busy. Fall is coming soon, and with that, we're heading into the harvest season. How is Frey Vineyards looking? Where in mid-end August is a vineyard at this point?
We are probably one of the last vineyards in California to have ripe fruit to pick. So we're looking at the middle of September this year to begin our harvest. Harvest is mainly triggered, the most important factor is when the grapes flower, and we have a cooler climate up there. So we're typically about 3 to 4 weeks behind Napa and Sonoma County. But it looks like a wonderful year this year, as opposed to last year. Last year, 2008, was one of those years you'd rather not experience. We had a devastating frost in April, and we lost about 40% of the fruit in Mendocino County, 25% on our farm. And then we had the forest fires burning all summer. But this year, everything's been pretty picture perfect, and we have an abundant crop and very good quality.
Yeah. Tom Stubbs was saying from Stubbs Vineyards in Marin County, who I had on the show a few weeks ago, he was saying that the year before was record, and then last year, he also lost almost all of his crop, actually, because he didn't have the water in the beginning of the year to protect the blossoms, the blooming of the vineyards, and basically everything froze off.
Right. Even we had water, but it got down to 25 degrees on April 22nd, and the shoots are so far out at that point that even with frost protection, they can't be saved. Hmm. So we're, you know, you hope that this isn't an indication of a climate change, but who knows? We're in sort of unknown territory here.
Yes. So Frey Vineyards is the first certified organic vineyard in the nation.
That's right. We started in 1980. My husband, Jonathan, and I, and one of his brothers, Matthew, founded the winery. Jonathan and I met a few years earlier. We were apprentices with Alan Chadwick, who is the renowned English horticulturalist who brought the term French intensive biodynamic into the United States. He had, after he left the University of Santa Cruz, he moved up to Covelo, California, where he ran a garden project. And we both arrived from different directions at the heyday. There were about 40 people there. And it was a wonderful year and a half of studying with him. It definitely changed my life and instilled me with both very practical and very inspirational reasons to be an organic farmer.
He was quite a character, right? Let's talk about him for a second.
Oh, he certainly was.
Shakespeare quoting.
He grew up on an English estate. His father was a member of the English aristocracy, but His mother was an Italian who brought
the fire
of the fire and the passion into his life. And she actually knew Rudolf Steiner. And Chadwick did rub shoulders with Steiner. He was probably in his teens. Chadwick was known to embellish stories, so we never knew exactly the veracity of some of these tales he told. But
fine line.
He did embrace many aspects of biodynamics. So he was raised with beautiful gardens around him and trained in classical horticulture. He also was a member of the Royal Shakespearean Company and also studied professional opera singing.
And acting, too,
and
right?
Acting. Actor, yeah, well, the Shakespearean Company. Yeah, he was the actor.
I know the story in Santa Cruz where he wanted to start a garden, and in order to prove the university wrong, I guess, he picked the worst hillside, 5 acres of just overgrown and sandy soil, impossible to grow anything. And then a year or so later, after I don't know how many thousands of pounds of horse manure they brought in and rebuilding the soil, if you go there now, it's incredible, right? It's an oasis of lushness and diversity. And
it's a wonderful example of what people can do with marginal land. And it real directly influenced one of his most famous proteges, John Jevons, who now is up also in Mendocino County, up in Willits. And John's written the very famous gardening book called How to Grow More Vegetables Than You Ever Thought Possible on Less,
Less Land
Than You Ever Imagined.
Yes.
And he specializes in training people, you know, how to work with marginal soils. He emphasizes that about a third of the crops you grow should be actual compost crops. So he's applying the principles of biodynamics that you're looking.
Meaning what? That you grow them and then work them back into the soil.
Right. You're trying to meet what the farm needs for fertility with the resources of the farm.
So you both studied, or you studied under Alan Chadwick.
And Jonathan did too. That's where we met each other. We fell in love out in the potato field.
Singing opera in the potato patch.
Jonathan was the pianist.
Oh, that's great. And then who had the access to the land? How did it start? Why Mendocino?
Jonathan's mother and father, Biba and Paul Fry, were both psychiatrists and medical doctors escaping from Brooklyn, New York, and they made their way with their ever-growing family. They eventually had 12 children. Jonathan's the oldest. They made their way west. They stopped in Navajo country for a while. My father-in-law was a CO during World War II. And he did his alternative service there. They had several of their children born there and eventually ended up in Mendocino County and bought a beautiful 100-acre abandoned barley and hop farm. And neither of them were farmers. They wanted a place of wildness and openness for their children to roam around and grow up in. So it was the second generation, Jonathan and his brothers and sisters, who became interested in agriculture. And the agriculture that was around them were vineyards. We became vineyard number 12 in Mendocino County. Now there's over, I think we're pushing 100 vineyards and wineries in Mendocino County now. So the land was there. Again, they never imagined themselves as farmers, but there was a threat that the property was going to be turned into a lake with a development of a dam at the bottom of the road. The dam never happened, but my father-in-law thought that he should quickly improve the value of his property, and he enlisted Jonathan, who was then 14, to plant a vineyard. And that was quite a challenge, you know,
so
for
that if
a 14-year-old.
The land had to be sold, it would have more value.
It would have more value. Yeah.
So this vineyard was born out of protecting the land and increasing
the
value.
Exactly. But luckily, Paul, my father-in-law, was friends with John Parducci, and he met John at the bar one day and said, "John, what variety of grapes shall I plant?" And John said, "Well, I think you should try this grape that nobody's really planting here called Cabernet Sauvignon. It's supposed to be a good one for Mendocino County." So we ended up with 8 acres of very wonderful Cabernet grapes, and they were sold to different wineries. They were organic by neglect. But one day they got sold to a little winery in Santa Cruz called Sunrise Winery, and they went on to win a gold medal with the grapes from our land.
Oh, so you knew you had exceptional land.
Yeah, we thought, well, apparently we have gold medal quality grapes. We should be able to do this. But of course we wanted to do it organically, and people thought we were crazy, and we probably, I don't know if we were crazy, but we were a bit naive. But we doggedly started out in 1980. We made 2,000 cases that year. And last year we made 90,000 cases. So we've grown a lot.
And we'll talk about the development of Frey Vineyards in a second. My guest today, Katrina Frey, owner of Frey Vineyards and also the president of Demeter USA. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. We'll be right back after the break.
I want to break it in my hands. I want to grow something wild and unruly. I want to sleep on the hard ground in the comfort of your arms, on a pillow of blue bonnets in a blanket made of stars. Oh, it sounds good to me. I said, cowboy.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet Lee Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
For the ultimate West Marin experience, visit Toby's Feed Barn in Point Reyes Station, home of the Point Reyes Farmers Market every Saturday. Toby's Feed Barn features organic produce, native plants, gifts, books, an organic coffee bar, an art gallery, concerts, even daily yoga classes. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station, open 7 days a week, family owned and operated since 1942, a West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Frey Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frey never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frey organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frey Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at freywine.com. That's FreyWine.com.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg, and my guest today is Katrina Frey, owner of Frey Vineyards and also the president of Demeter USA. Katrina, you were saying before the break that Frey has grown from the early 80s with 2,000 cases to now 80,000. And you have expanded beyond Cabernet Sauvignon. What else do you produce? What else do you grow?
On our property now, we grow Chardonnay, Zinfandel, Petite Syrah, Syrah, and Sauvignon Blanc. And then we also purchase grapes from our neighboring certified organic growers. So that allows us to offer a total of about 11 varietals right now.
Even a port-like wine.
We make a port. We wish we could call it a port, but the U.S. Signed a trade agreement with Portugal, so we had to which gave Portugal the sole right to use the word port. Ports in the United States that were produced before this agreement were signed are still allowed to call themselves ports. So we had to come up with a new name, so we called it desertage. But port is made, you start with your fermenting grapes. In this case, it was Zinfandel. And then we made a special brandy out of Chenin Blanc organic grapes. And when the wine is still fermenting and full of the natural sugars of the juice, you pour the brandy into it. The alcohol level rises, so it stops fermentation. So you have this wonderful blend of the brandy with the sweet grape juice. And then you age it typically for 3 or 4 years. So the port that we're selling right now is a 2002 port.
With a nice sugar content, right? Because you don't let the microbes eat up all the sugar.
Right. It's a 19% residual sugar.
Yes. You are the first organic winery, which doesn't only mean that your grapes are grown organically, but that you're processing, which I believe you do on site.
We do. We make all of our wine on site. And
that's organic too.
Yes, we're a certified organic processor. So the National Organic Program, the NOP, has defined organic wine as wine made from organically grown grapes, but then processed without any synthetic materials. And the main issue in winemaking is sulfites.
Tell us about it. How does it work? Because there's, you know, it says on organic wine, made without sulfites added, and then some people say, well, there are naturally occurring sulfites anyway, and you can't really make a great wine without using sulfites. What are sulfites for, and what's the difference to between synthetic and naturally occurring sulfites?
Right. The kind of synthetic sulfites that a winemaker uses are metabisulfites, and it's a very useful tool for winemaking because it's an antioxidant. And it's a preservative. So these the synthetic sulfites are dumped into the wine typically during fermentation and then again right before bottling. And they float through the wine and they bind with the different components and become stable. But then there are leftover sulfites that are free in the wine. And then when you drink that wine, they're also free to scavenge around in your body. And people who are sensitive to them get typically headaches, sometimes sniffles. Now, it is true that during fermentation, there can be some naturally occurring sulfites produced. They're at very low levels. 85% of our wines test out at 0 parts per million.
Where would they come from as naturally occurring sulfites?
Well, you're pushing me in my chemistry, in my chemistry knowledge here, but it's a natural compound. For example, an egg has 6 parts per million of naturally occurring sulfites. Broccoli has 12 parts per million naturally occurring sulfites. But because they're chemically bound, they do not react. You know, nobody gets a sulfite headache from eating an egg or eating some broccoli.
It's actually a nutrient, right?
It's a nutrient.
We do need sulfites.
And yes, and there's sulfur in the soil.
That's right.
So it is a nutrient. So for people who are sensitive to sulfites, any wines that are made without the synthetic sulfites are going to be fine for them to drink, even if they have 1 to 2 to 6 parts naturally occurring sulfites.
How do you do it without? Why can you spare it when...
Our process is very similar to how you make beer. And what you have to do is have a very, very clean facility, which you don't really have to focus on that as much if you're using synthetic sulfites. So we have a big industrial steam cleaner.
Because synthetic sulfites kill everything, right?
Right.
As a preservative, they
kill
if there are any microbes,
the spoilage
left,
organisms.
Yeah.
So what we have to do is very carefully sterilize everything with steam, all of our hoses and tanks. We do a lot of our aging in stainless steel rather than in oak, and we insert the oak into the stainless steel because it's easier for us to control the conditions in the stainless. wine does need a certain amount of oxygen to mature properly. And part of our technique is knowing at what point during the life of the wine it's okay to introduce that oxygen without allowing the wine to oxidize. So it definitely can be done. I'm somewhat surprised that there aren't more wineries doing it, because there is such a market for it, such a demand for it. And I think the more experimentation that we have, you know, the better for the whole wine industry.
Yes. Well, there's La Rocca Vineyards.
There's La Rocca.
Which is certified organic, mm-hmm. no sulfates added.
And then there's Tony Norskog and his Nevada County Wine Guild wines. There's a handful of wineries in California.
Wonderful wines. I mean,
they are wonderful
wines. The quality
wines.
At this point, I think organic wine has gotten a bad reputation from the very early days on, where it was still explored.
Yeah.
At this point, these are award winners, even in the comparison to non-organic wines. So you can absolutely find.
Yeah, if you go on our website, we list our awards, and you can see that our wines win gold and silver medals consistently. And these are in conventional wine judging contests, so they're being compared right. to conventionally produced wines.
Yeah, wonderful. So in addition to being organic, both the vineyard as well as the processing, so you can call your wine certified organic, you're also Demeter certified, which brings up biodynamic.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean exactly?
Right. Well, biodynamic agriculture was founded by Dr. Rudolf Steiner, who was an Austrian philosopher who lived in the beginning of the 1900s. And he was in the 20s, he was approached by a group of German farmers who noticed that with the introduction of chemical agriculture, which came about, you know, during the war and after the war, First World War, that their animal fertility problems were emerging. Food wasn't storing as well, and seeds weren't germinating as well. And they approached Steiner and asked him to think about that. He was a very well-respected scientist, and he gave a series of talks called the Agriculture Course, and that is the foundation now for modern biodynamic farming. And the fundamental principle is that you're looking at the farm as a whole organism. So it's a systems approach to agriculture. You want to close the circle, and you try to meet the fertility needs of the farm from the resources of the farm. So that quickly implies that you introduce farm animals, because they are important for the biodiversity of the farm. It's important to collect their manures. You make really high quality compost out of those manures. You, in the United States, part of the Demeter standard is to actually set aside at least 10% of your land for biodiversity. And that's you know, quite challenging for some farms that are farming from border to border. But of course, we know that hedgerows are really important.
You're listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg, and my guest today is Katrina Frey, owner of Frey Vineyards, the first certified organic and certified Demeter for biodynamic practices vineyard in the United States. And Katrina is also the president of Demeter USA. So organic is a set of, you know, 550 plus pages of a certification protocol that defines what is allowed, what is not allowed, what's prohibited, what you can use at certain times to whatever degree. It's a food production system outline. Is that comparable to Demeter? What's the difference between organic and biodynamic? And just to clarify for the listener, Demeter is the one or one of the certification agencies in the United States. Is it the only one for biodynamic?
It is the only one. In the United States, Demeter and biodynamic is actually a trademark term. And to use the term, you have to be certified by the Demeter USA. Demeter USA is part of an international organization called Demeter International. So there's Demeter Brazil, there's Demeter France. So to be a biodynamic farm, you have to first meet the National Organic Program standards. So you take that as your baseline. And then above that, you're looking at your inputs. You need to limit your inputs and to treat the farm holistically.
Inputs as in?
Well, as
fertilizers.
As in fertilizers and composts and Chilean nitrate. So there's a limit as to how much you can bring on into the farm.
Intelligence, basically. You want to keep the intelligence on the farm.
Right, because you know, we know that agriculture is, you know, in a way an insult to a natural system. I mean, if you look at the highest form of life on Earth, you know, you might come up with an ancient forest. So if you look at that forest and try to understand how does that forest survive, you see that the fertility needs come from the plants that are already in that forest. You see that insect controls come from the biodiversity within that forest. So you look at farming and try to apply those same principles on your farm. You look at water flow, you consider climate, you
which is really incredible, right? When you look at a closed system like a tropical rainforest, the ratio of decay and microbes, and I mean it's so dense and close by. So insult is a sharp word, but it's definitely a disturbance to have all of a sudden, you know, 1 acre or 100 acres of a certain human activity, and yet we do need to feed ourselves. So Demeter and Biodynamic is thriving, or is the idea of getting as close to this intact ecosystem as possible. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. The mission of Demeter is to heal the earth through biodynamic principles. And you do that, again, with always holding your soil as your key feature, you know, about how well you're doing. And so you're looking at encouraging soil life and humus. And
so what are the main differences, if you can point out a few, between organic and then going beyond? What's the, in Demeter certification or in biodynamic practices, beyond thinking more of, you know, on farm as as a closed system? But I know there are differences in the way you harvest. You're allowed to harvest, or is it a recommendation when the sugar content is highest?
Yeah, that's more of a recommendation. The actual principles are that you have to include animals into your farm landscape. You have to set aside your 10%, and you have to apply the biodynamic preparations, the
which
homeopathic
the moon,
light.
Right?
But yes, and then there's recommendations as to the best times to apply those biodynamic principles. And
tell us
a little bit
about the moon. How does that, because that's a big component.
It is a big component, and it's not just in biodynamic farming, it's not just the moon, but it's the other planets that circle around our solar system. So we have a very wonderful tool called the Biodynamic Planting Calendars for biodynamic farmers. And after Steiner set out these principles, there was a woman, Maria Thune, who worked to develop a biodynamic calendar that reveals the flows of energy that are coming down through the air onto the earth. And I mean, everyone knows that the moon, for example, affects the tides, and farmers for centuries have understood that seeds germinate more quickly at certain phases of the moon. And then beyond that, there are other influences as well that are affecting seed growth. So the biodynamic calendar lays out each month and gives you recommendations of when to work with certain crops. For example, if you're planting a vegetable crop that is focusing on roots, on leaves, on fruits, and on flowers. And so there are certain times of each month when it's best to work with those plants, best to plant the seed, and best to harvest them.
Great. We'll dive into that a little bit more in a second. I'm talking with Katrina Fry, owner of Fry Vineyards and the president of Demeter USA. This is an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. We'll be right back after the break.
What
We're driving slow through the snow on Fifth Avenue. And right now, radio's all that we can hear. Man, we ain't talked since we left, it's so overdue. It's cold outside, but between us, it's worse than here.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet Lee Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's spotica.com.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Are you looking for a romantic and unusual location in the Bay Area for your wedding or upcoming anniversary? Toby's Feed Barn offers the perfect venue for your celebration. A rustic barn in the heart of beautiful West Marin, with local organic caterers ready to delight your guests amid bales of hay. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station. Open 7 days a week. Family owned and operated since 1942. A West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Sustainable Food News is the premier source of daily news and market information for the organic, sustainable, and natural food industries. Headline after headline, Sustainable Food News reports on a profound shift in food buying habits as more and more people begin to understand the impact of their purchases on the environment and communities around the world. Join Dan McGovern, publisher of Sustainable Food News, every Saturday morning on An Organic Conversation. For more information, visit www.sustainablefoodnews.com.
And we are back to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg. And my guest today is Katrina Frye, owner of Frye Vineyards and also the president of Demeter USA. Katrina, you were saying before the break that the moon, which is a big piece in the biodynamic calendar, in biodynamic philosophy, is regulates the tides. It really regulates the water as a whole, and most life forms are carbon and water, basically, right?
Absolutely.
Humans are 70% water. I don't exactly know what the water content is in plants. I guess it depends on the plant, but you would think, of course, the planetary system, as it changes and shifts and is influencing overall ecology constantly. What does that look like throughout the season each month? Like, when do you know what to do, what to plant? Does this calendar that you mentioned lay all this out? Or
it does, very specifically down to what hour of what day we shift from a root day into a leaf day, and it really encourages people to observe themselves. These calendars are beautiful. They lay out each month, but they also give the reasoning behind how you look at climate and how you look at the seasons, and then lots of places for your own notes. So it's a great practice for a backyard gardener to start noticing when you have dew in the morning, what times of month don't you have dew in the morning, being aware.
And how can the calendar, since it's always written a year, I guess, in advance,
mm-hmm.
Incorporate the weather, for example, the climate that week? Like, if
Right. Well, it is, you know,
it is embedded in a bigger.
It's embedded in a bigger picture of the march of the zodiac, and of course we can't predict the weather, and I'm sort of glad that we still can't. I like to think that we're not quite all that all knowing.
Yeah, I actually talked to a meteorologist just a week ago, and he said, you know, honestly, with all the machinery and all the equipment and everything we have, we still don't really know.
That's
we just
true.
Don't know. Things can change within, you know, 24 hours, of course, or less. Very sweet, very humbling. So how did you really get into it? Did you know when you grew up that you wanted to, obviously not, that you wanted to become a vineyard owner and a wine grower, and what was your plan as a youngster, or did you know right away?
To be honest, Helga, I didn't have any idea about the vineyard and wine part of it, but I knew that I wanted to have my hands in the soil, and I was raised by a wonderful artistic gardener mother, who wherever we lived made beautiful perennial gardens, and her father was a farmer and a sort of a jack of all trades in Vermont, my grandfather, and he ended up having a perennial nursery, and I'd spend most of my summers when I was in high school and college working with him, and I loved the flowering perennials, and I had this dream that I was going to work with Grandpa Johnny, but first I was going to go to California just
take over the
nursery. First I was going to go work with Alan Chadwick in California and learn how to do this all organically and then come back. And then, of course, I met Jonathan and we fell in love and got married. And
yeah, you're not the first person who got stuck in California for really
I
good
dragged
reasons.
Him back to Vermont for one season, and then he dragged me back to California, which wasn't a bad place to get drugged back to at all.
Yeah. Although Vermont is gorgeous too.
Yeah, they're very similar in a lot of ways, culturally.
So being in this now for how many years?
30 years now.
Yeah.
Of the winery, and
what have you?
Well,
how have you changed? How has the land changed you? What have you learned and seen?
You know, I started out as a gardener, and then I had to step away from doing a lot of that and just work with the mechanics of the winery. It's been a joy to watch the winery grow as the family has grown up. My brother-in-laws and sister-in-laws were just little kids when we started the winery, and now they're, you know, it's a family-owned business. I'm not the sole owner by any means, and now they've matured, and we have my
kids
children
helping, yes.
Now involved in the winery, my nephews and nieces. We have my great-nephew, so Jonathan's mom is still alive and going strong, so we have four generations, and I'm going to be a grandmother in February, so that it's very lovely. Last year, I dashed around the corner of the winery down into the cellar during harvest. We have big, giant stainless steel tanks, and looked up at the top of the tank, and there were my four children, like little ducklings in a row, all with hoses, all covered with splatters of grape juice. But I just thought, you know, how amazing to have this business that can incorporate the young people into it. And one of the challenges is to, you know, give them space and to let them come up with their own ideas and thoughts and talents. So we have plans to do things besides just have vineyards. We ordered a grape seed oil press from Germany, so we're experimenting with making our own grape seed oil. And then we have sort of the opposite of the standard biodynamic principle. We own 1,000 acres of land and only farm 120 of it, so we have a lot of woods and forests and possible forest products to make. But, you know, with all this new support and new energy coming in, I have a lot of more time again, so I am turning back to my gardening roots, and I have a perennial garden and a big vegetable garden. And I think the lesson that I'm most interested in right now is how do you observe a piece of land? And my mentors, Rudolf Steiner and Alan Chadwick, have both given me inspiration about how to do that. Steiner encouraged farmers to walk through and look at individual plants every day, but then at least once a week to take a larger picture. To, if you have a hill, to walk up to the top of the hill and gaze down and try to see the land as a whole. Try to see if you can actually watch the wind moving the grass. If it's raining, can you see the direction of the water? How much of that is natural? How much of that has been manipulated? Can you help those movements?
That's beautiful. I'm speaking with Katrina Frey, owner of Frey Vineyards. This is an organic conversation on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg. How do you apply that to your life outside the vineyard?
Right. Well, I think it comes down to, you know, how do we communicate? How do we understand? I mean, it is a mystery. The bees seem to have it down. There's
a story that you like. What's your biodynamic moment? I know it's connected to bees somehow.
Right.
You haven't told me the story.
I haven't told you the story.
Bees are the key to everything.
The bees seem to
coming
be
back
the
full circle.
Key.
Today's bee day.
Right. It's quite remarkable to watch a bee come in with a grain of pollen, knowing that grain of pollen came from a certain plant, and how are they going to communicate that? And then to actually pull out a frame of bees and watch that central bee with a ring of bees around it doing its dance, and learning that not only are they getting the visual clues from watching that bee dance, but the whole frame of wax is vibrating. So that vibration sets off vibrations on the other frames of wax within that hive. So within just, you know, a matter of seconds, suddenly this entire colony of 60,000 creatures gets the same message. And it really gave me pause, you know, to wonder how do we communicate? You know, maybe the group that I'm most interested in communicating is this extended family that's living and working together, and how do we really truly hear each other? Well, we can learn from the bees, perhaps.
Yeah, listening is a big part, maybe all of it, actually. And you are in that mother role, right? You're the mother. You're the mother of Frey Vineyards.
Well, we very much have
I mean,
the real
Jonathan's,
mother.
Yeah,
Jonathan's mother is alive and well.
Mother, but in terms of being really active,
yeah,
holding
it all
together.
I do hold a big part of the business. And maybe another image is that Alan Chadwick talked about planting seeds. I think that's my very favorite kind of act of gardening, is to plant a seed. And he encouraged us to hold the seed and then get a full visual image of what that plant is going to be when it's reaching its flowering and seeding stage. And, you know, that it's a wonderful exercise to hold the tiny, tiny carrot seed and imagine the carrot a whole year later flowering, and, you know, with the bees around it. And, you know, as we walk through life, we're going to plant our seeds, but, you know, to try to have an image of what the future of that seed is going to be.
Yeah, interesting that you use carrot. I wrote a blog about that. You can find my blogs on helgehellberg.com. It's fascinating that this little speck of dirt, really a carrot seed, is, you know, it's
so tiny.
It's so tiny. And yet it knows everything to turn into this, you know, green top to begin with, and then it makes this root, and it knows where the color needs to go, and all that. And then it also has the generational information from the carrots that went before.
Yes,
it knows how to adapt to the land wherever you planted before, and that is incredible. That that is the most efficient memory stick I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Look at the size and what's in there. And it can be dormant for a year or two or three, and then you plant it and put some darkness and water on it, and then it grows into a carrot. Wow, that's a miracle.
It is.
Right
it
there.
It truly is.
So what's the future of try vineyards? Mm-hmm. Like, where do you see the vineyard in 10 years, in 20 years? You basically have all your children working there right now. Are they planning on staying?
Well, the three oldest ones are, the youngest one is still looking at going off to college, but he's interested in getting a degree in biology.
Yeah, he'll come back.
Hopefully that will lead him
back.
Right. We're interested in producing more of our food. It's a community of about 50 people. So,
and that's your family.
I have to give credit for my brother-in-law, Luke, who led us into biodynamics. And now he's really the holder of the animals. So we have a new baby cow on the ranch, and we have goats, and we make our own cheese. We have a delivery system, so we all get fresh goat and cow milk every day. We've got a big apple crop. So we want to get more into food processing, trying to grow some of our own oils, and, you know, eventually maybe sell some of those products as well. But caring for our land, making sure that all the wild animals that live there still have a healthy home, improving
family.
The quality of the wine. We want to keep making our wine better, but yeah, holding the health of the family.
And your extended family, as in your customers, you mentioned a few websites before the show. I think this is the perfect time. There's, if people want to get more into, learn more about the biodynamic practices, there's the National Biodynamic Farming and Gardening Association, and their website is biodynamics.com.
They have a whole level of memberships and offer a wonderful journal and newsletter.
And you can get the calendar from them as well, right?
The calendar that you mentioned. And you can find out where to get the preparations as well.
Wonderful. That's biodynamics.com. Then there's also the organization that certifies for biodynamics, which you are the president of. That's Demeter USA.
Correct.
DEMETERUSA.com.
And we want to tell consumers about the wonders of biodynamic foods and the health benefits. We really believe that consumers have a right to understand agricultural practices and to a right to having food grown in a way that they support.
A right and a desire, whether or not we know it or we're aware of it. But it's amazingly rich when you do dive in. And then, of course, if people would love your delicious biodynamic, certified organic, and sulfite-free wine, they can go to freywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. Well, thank you so much,
Thank
Katrina,
you.
For
it's
being
been a
here.
Pleasure to be here on National Bee Day of all days.
A short hour. Thanks for coming down, and you're heading back up to Mendocino, back to your vineyard.
I am.
Thanks to Katrina Fry of Fry Vineyards for coming to the studio on this beautiful day. An Organic Conversation is produced by our wonderful Jen Lloyd. Amazing production assistant is Kristen O'Heary. Underwriting production provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all, and also always thanks to the team here at Green 960, our very own Fab Five, Corey Calward, Mark McNone, Chris Gardinier, and of course John Scott and John Plessis. Also always thanks to you, our listeners, for being part of the show and for actually listening. For blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com. And you can also find us now on iTunes, where you can download An Organic Conversation to your iPhone or iPod and take us with you wherever you want to. We love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com. Coming up next is the Gavin Newsom Show, so please stay put. I'm your host, Helge Hellberg. Have a great weekend, and thanks again for listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960.
Everybody wants to live together. Why can't we live together?